Welcome to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. I'm your host, Jolene Katzenberger. This week here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we are enjoying an Indian summer out in the garden. We're looking ahead to Thanksgiving, and we're even thinking about Christmas. We'll be talking with Master Gardener Joellen Meyer Sharp of TheHoosierGardener.com about what's going on out in the vegetable garden right now. We'll also check in with the butcher babe herself, Laurielle Gavin of Food Network Star, about what she's got cooking for Thanksgiving. And we'll hear about an upcoming Christmas food and drink tradition when we talk to the City Market's Stevie Stays Kirsch about 12 Chefs of Christmas, the market's signature fundraising event. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org.
Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.
There's nothing like a string of 70-degree days in November to get you back outside. After a cold snap and a hard frost, we've been enjoying some fabulous Indian summer weather. And that's got me, and maybe you too, wanting to do more than just rake leaves. And maybe if we shouldn't even be raking them up in the first place, well, that's even better, right? To find out just what we should be doing out in the vegetable garden right now, and maybe what we should be doing with all those leaves, I talked recently with Master Gardener Joellen Meyer Sharp of HoosierGardener.com.
Well, this time of the year, as you say, we've had the hard frost, so that's taken its toll on a lot of our vegetables, especially tomatoes and peppers and basil. They just are not very tolerant of cold temperatures at all. And so most of those things you can pull from your garden, your herb garden, or your vegetable garden and put them in the compost pile. A lot of gardeners don't compost tomato plants because they can harbor a lot of diseases. And so I'm one of those that actually does put the tomato plants in the trash rather than putting them in my compost pile.
So you don't risk getting any sort of anything in there that you don't want.
Right. In an ideal world, the compost pile would get warm enough to kill any pathogens or diseases or insects that might be on the plants, but we really, in most of our backyards, that's a harder thing to regulate. And so to be safe without introducing, because there's a lot of leaf diseases that tomato plants carry. And so that's why I put it in the trash.
So we're clearing out all the remnants of things that got hit by the frost. Other things probably are about done?
A lot of other things are probably about done. We can sow a little bit of lettuce still, if we wanted to cover it with a cover crop or something like that, some of the greens, the spinach. If you can find chard at a lot of garden centers still being used as ornamentals in fall plantings, but of course you can plant that in the garden and grow the chard and use that. It's very cold tolerant, chard is, so that's kind of nice. And also in terms of planting, this is the prime season for planting garlic and shallots.
Sounds interesting. Well, let's talk a bit about that. I think I would like some garlics and shallots next year.
Yes. Well, if you're interested in lots of different varieties, I would suggest go online to Google and type in seed garlic or seed shallots, and you'll get a list of probably 8 or 10 online retailers that carry garlic and shallots. So we can plant them now. And usually they're planted about 3 to 4 inches deep, maybe 5 inches deep, not real deep. And they can go in where you've already planted vegetables, So you've already got the soil nice and yummy and warm and everything. And then they sort of winter over underground, and then in spring they send up the scapes, which a lot of foodies love, those garlic scapes that they can chop up early and make, use them in salads or in cooking. And then in summer, you harvest the garlic or the shallots. And I'm sure you know that shallots are very expensive to buy.
They are. You see them at the store and you think, oh my goodness, that's kind of pricey.
But, they're very easy to grow. I've grown shallots many years. I've grown them in pots. I've grown them in the ground.
And so you can grow them in pots. Yeah. So that might be kind of nice.
Yeah, you can. You can grow them in pots.
Yeah, does it take like very big ones, like big pots or flower pots?
You'd want it to be an all-weather container so it could stay outside. Bigger is better than smaller because it sort of protects it from freezing solid kind of thing. I usually keep it in sort of a protected area and then dry it to a more exposed area once spring comes and I start to see the sprouts coming up.
It's about time to, like, rake leaves. So what can we do with those?
Well, we can burn a lot of calories by raking leaves. That's always nice. We have a couple of options. I'm one of those that mows my leaves. And then I leave the bits of leaves on the lawn to help fertilize the lawn. And if we do that and we leave our grass clippings on the lawn in the summertime, we can reduce our fertilization by one application, which is saving money and saving time. We can also rake the leaves or chop them up and use them to as sort of a winter cover in our vegetable garden or in our wherever we grew like annual herbs or something like that. And what that does is it protects the soil from erosion in the wintertime. It also gives a little bit of a covering or a mulch to it to keep weed seeds from germinating there and everything. And by spring, it should all be really worked in nicely and then you just kind of plant in what's there.
Now, that's the leaves that are chopped up.
You can mow them or rake them. It's just kind of whatever works for you. You know, to me, mowing, so I have to make two passes to get these leaves chopped up to a decent size. To me, that's easier than raking, putting them in the bag, moving the bag to the curb and hope the city picks it up at some time, you know. So it's just kind of what I think works for you as an individual. I'm personally known as a leaf thief.
Really?
Yes, I am. I know who in my neighborhood actually chops their leaves before they put them in their bags and leave them for the city to pick up. So I go around under stealth of night and, you know, feel the bags. Do they feel lightweight? Are there like rocks and sticks in there? And then I throw them in my car. I usually try to get about 5 or 6 bags every year.
That's for mulch or compost, right?
It is. I don't use it for compost as much as I use it as a soil amendment. Or I use it as a winter mulch, like around the plants and everything. And like I said, as the winter, pursues, then it just, the leaves break down and work their way into the soil. And that's it.
There are some things that are still coming out of the garden right now, right? So it's still producing.
It is still producing, so you can still be harvesting, like, a lot of the root vegetables will be coming on, and we'll soon see those at the farmer's market also, which is, I think, one of the great things about the winter market is being able to get root vegetables. And I grew celery for the first time this year.
Now, that's what we have this right in front of us. So tell me about the celery that you've got.
Well, this one is called Peppermint Stick, and mine came from Burpee. It was a trial plant that I got this spring from Burpee, and I'd never grown celery before. I'm kind of one of those people, when you get celery at the grocery store and you take it home and you say, well, should I throw it away now or should I throw it away 2 weeks from now? Because I only need like one stalk, or two stalks for whatever recipe.
And it's going to get all mushy
and gunky. It's really pretty gross. You know, it lasts a while, but not forever. And so I thought, well, heck, I'll try this. And I snipped a little bit here and we want to give it a try and see what
absolutely.
It says.
Absolutely. So this is celery just harvested.
And you can actually harvest it all summer. You just harvest the exterior stalks of the plant all summer. I have to say this was incredibly easy to grow. It didn't have any insect or disease problems. It's an attractive plant because the peppermint stick, it has kind of a reddish cast to the stalks on it.
And the leaves are pretty too?
The leaves are very nice. They've started to color up here in the fall. I think we have actually two examples here. We have one that's the older stalks of the celery and the one that are really the newer stalks, sort of the inside parts of the celery. And there is a big difference in the taste. So I would say if you're going to grow celery, you do want to harvest it pretty regularly, the outside stalks, because the taste seems to deteriorate a little bit. But the new stalk is very good.
Mm-hmm. It's sweet and has a, I'd say, a pungent celery
it's
taste
very,
to it.
It's very celery-ish, mm-hmm. you know?
But that first snap of it is very sweet. I think that first bite is very sweet. So, I might try this again.
I think it's pretty tasty.
I like celery myself, but I think it is pretty tasty.
We've been talking with Master Gardener Joellen Myers-Sharp. To keep up with Joellen and for more information on gardening here in Central Indiana, go to whosyourgardener.com. Indianapolis resident Laurielle Gavin caught people's attention on last year's season of Food Network Star. Dubbed the Butcher Babe, Laurielle showed off her meat market skills on this show, and she really has worked off and on at Kincaid's Butcher Shop here in Indianapolis for several years. But Laurielle has also been building up her Food Network following. She appeared on and won an episode of Cutthroat Kitchen, and she has other projects in the works as well. But right now, she's focusing on her personal chef business, and she has cooked up a Thanksgiving menu, and she even delivers.
Well, basically, I'm just enjoying the fall. I've been traveling a lot to California, and I have some clients out there, and I've got a lot of stuff going. There's a lot of, entrepreneur-like people that are excited about things all weird and extraordinary, so I fit in really well out there. Basically, I'm just generating new clients with my private chef business, and it's been a lot of fun going to people's homes, getting to know them, seeing the look on their face when they fall in love with the dish that I make, and that's pretty much it.
You know, people can book you and come in and do a dinner in their house, and you're also gonna have some Thanksgiving ideas too, right?
Yeah. Well, personally, Thanksgiving is one of my favorite times of the year. Like, I would love to be on a couch in a food coma, in a Snuggie, with some cookies in my pocket. But I would like other people to enjoy their holidays as well. And so I thought, I can't really clone myself, even though that's every adult's dream. I'll do a Thanksgiving concept to go. So pretty much people will purchase this beautiful spread of food that I have, and I can tweak it if need be, but I think it's pretty darn perfect. And I'll show up, I'll deliver it. Everything has been either smoked, pre-cooked, or is ready to go right into the oven in a aluminum disposable container. It's going to come with a plastic lid too, so when you're done cooking it, there's no, dishes. That's the biggest thing for me. I hate doing dishes, but I'll do them for you.
Tell me what's on this Thanksgiving to-go menu that you've come up with.
All right. Well, basically, I'm the chef. My thing forever has been smile with your eyes, cook with your heart. And I sat down one day with a blank piece of paper and a couple paintbrushes. I'm a really visual person because food is art. So I thought, well, I'm just going to start to paint a whole scape of what I would like to walk into for Thanksgiving. And I went to my homie place and pretend like I was hanging out with my grandma. And basically, it's going to start off with some apps, People are going to be showing up, you want something easy and quick. And so I made the old school cheese ball.
Because people love it, right?
Yeah, because duh is the answer. Obviously there'll be the necessarily accoutrements for that, some crustinis, crackers, etc. So I've got that, and then I'm doing an oysters Rockefeller because duh too, that's delicious. Here in Indiana, we always had a oyster dressing, and I thought, well, how can I kind of upscale that a little bit?
Right. A nice play on oyster dressing if people aren't, maybe they don't really like oyster dressing like me, but oysters right. Rockefeller kind of play on that. That's great.
Right. Exactly. And that will be the one prep intensive thing that you can bond as a family over our fresh oysters. The stuffing will already be pre-made. And just so you know, you're like, I don't like oysters. Well, whatever. You haven't tried my oysters Rockefeller because I just converted two people last weekend at a private chef event. But seriously. All right, so we got that and then some salad skewers. Basically, I'll just pick out the most beautiful fresh ingredients, a little bit of balsamic, parmesan, lemon zest. Like, I just let my ingredients sing, and I generally try to use all organic. So we've got that nice and easy. Then you have a choice of three proteins, and I'm the butcher babe, so you know I brought it.
Of course you did.
Right? So you've got a center cut barrel prime beef tenderloin that you can use if you'd like. That would be paired with hare covers with brown butter and almonds. Keeping it plain and simple, I said butter, everybody. All right, then your other choice is pork tenderloins. They're about a pound and a half a piece before I fillet them and pound them down nice and thin. And then I stuff them with sweet potatoes, goat cheese, ginger, and orange segments. Fresh thyme, what's up? And then I smoke those bad boys after I roll them up. So it's essentially like a pinwheel. Then you're going to...
Sounds good so far. Keep going.
Right? I'm hungry. I caramelized those two and I smoke them with brown sugar and mustard. Then that's going to be served on top of roasted parsnips and apples, because duh. And then, if that's not enough for you, you could choose a miniature turducken.
Oh my goodness, so you have to tell me about that.
All right. Well, I'm the Louisiana girl, you know, so... And plus, it's cool. Like, who doesn't want a big old puck of meat on their table? The guys are going to be fighting over it. But essentially, it's just the turkey breast with... I like to use chicken thighs, then on the next layer, and then cured duck breast. And that would be smoked, so you would be, you know, reheating that. And then for the sides, I've got my famous shrimp and corn casserole. If you've had this, then you know what I'm talking about. It's the thing you wake up in the middle of the night and wish you had a little bite of. And you might even go to the fridge. I've seen people do it. So I've got those. And then all of the meats and sides will have the option of being served with my famous blue cheese sauce from Food Network Star in Vegas.
Now, we saw that on TV, which was, so that looked magnificent.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And this blue cheese sauce has bacon in it, so you can decide if you want to invest in your future or not. But I'm going to be eating the bacon, and I'm pretty sure you will too. And it's got andouille and a crab meat and a bourbon. Like, it's delicious. If you don't like something on this menu, then I just suggest putting some of that on it, and then you will.
And then we'll like it, whatever it is. We just put that on it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then I do a zucchini and squash gratin, which is essentially just really nice and thinly sliced vegetables with a cream sauce. There's tons of cheese on it. So you're going to like that too. All right. And then something you guys may not know about me, I love making desserts.
Oh, now see, we hear all about the meat, but tell me about the desserts too.
Right. Well, there's a sweet side to this little butcher babe here, believe it or not. And so I decided to bring it home, home style. So I did apple dumplings, because those are easy to reheat, and they're going to have that beautiful, like, spicy sauce on those. You can pop them right into the oven when you're ready to serve them. And then I'm going to be using the Galleries macaroons. Mm-hmm. This year, my good friends Ben Hardy and Allison Kiefer have started their own little business, and they're absolutely delicious. So we're going to make some pumpkin spice macaroons that'll be wonderful to piece on. And then my famous wax paper caramels. Thank you, Grandma. I still haven't given out the recipe, I promised you.
Now, these are some of the things that helped you win the tryout for Food Network Star originally, right?
Yes, exactly. I actually forgot about that. Yeah, they are. And the more I do these private events or cooking classes, I've started to compile my own signature dishes, which will eventually be part of a cookbook. So I'm actually working on a cookbook right now, too. That should be out in about a year. Yeah, and last but not least, there's some bourbon vanilla ice cream, because y'all know I cook with that bourbon.
This seems like such a you menu. Like, this mm-hmm. is just so you. So people can have it, too, so they can order it up, and you'll deliver it right to them for Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it is $100 a person, but... Check it out. You're not doing any dishes. You're not running around with everybody else in traffic. They're in containers that you can put right into the fridge for leftovers, because you'll have plenty of those too. And you just won't have to stress about it. And you can say a famous person made your meal. So,
exactly. Straight from the Food Network, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, guys, it won't be the last time you see me on TV this year. I can't say what, so I won't. But, you know, help me out. I probably won't be here in the next couple months. Like, I'm going to be moving out to California if everything goes like it should, you know, like Rachel Ray and Giada aren't going to be around forever. So
so somebody has to be out there, right?
Yeah.
Why not you?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm just going to keep doing me and making food that comes straight from my heart, and these flavors won't quit.
We've been talking with Food Network stars Larielle Gavin, who is busy with her new projects and her personal chef business. You can find her on Facebook and at butcherbabe.co. We are back here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio talking with Larielle Gavin, the butcher babe on last year's season of Food Network Star. She also appeared on and won an episode of Alton Brown's Cutthroat Kitchen, and she has some personal appearances coming up this winter in Indianapolis as well. I talked with Larielle recently about some of her Food Network experiences, what it's like to get recognized, and what advice she'd give if you were heading to a Food Network Star audition.
Well, luckily, I've got some things going on in January, which is usually a slow month for food, but that is not the case this year. I'm going to be at Fantastic Food Fest with Ted Allen, name dropper, and then the Indianapolis Home Show, and then last but not least, because I'm going to be sick of this cold weather, I'm going to fly down to Texas for Zest Fest, which is essentially the celebration of all things spicy.
So the Fantastic Food Fest is here in Indianapolis at the State Fairgrounds, January 16th and 17th. And then there's the Home Show, and you will be there January 23rd and 25th. Mm-hmm. But you know, we have this fall to get through, and I am betting that people see you and they recognize you. So tell me a little bit about what it's like just kind of going about your life here in Indianapolis.
Okay. You know what? That's really funny because people totally do. Like, I travel often. Like, I have other clients in other states, like from the East and the West Coast, and so I'll be flying. And I'll have my makeup on and everything, and people are like, "Are you that butcher babe girl?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And then I'm a hugger, so I hug, you know, and it's really funny. But other times I find myself, like, not really in the mood to be discovered. And then I feel like I look like even more of a famous person incognito because...
Because you're trying to be incognito?
Yeah. I never thought this would be, like, my life, you know? Like, I've always been, like, that rock and roll looking chick with, like, oversized sunglasses on. And who cares if it's 10 a.m. and I'm, you know, it's dark somewhere in a room. Like, I'm going to wear these sunglasses. And, yeah, it's pretty bizarre and even funnier when you're, like... with your friends or family, you know, like your family just starts beaming or like your boyfriend's like, can't we just be alone?
Aw, that's sweet. Now, so has your mom gotten to experience that or your grandma? Have they mm-hmm. gotten to experience that whole celebrity stuff?
Yeah. I love it. It's probably my favorite thing about the whole experience was getting to celebrate the reasons and the people that made me the person that I am today. You know, almost like a gift, you know, like I probably never be Oprah status, but like that's my gift to you. So there you go.
Aw, now see, family and food is all very important to you, right? So tell me a little bit about your sort of, you know, family and food philosophy.
Okay. Well, basically, less is more. I feel like if you get the best ingredients that you possibly can, and working in restaurants for so many years, I've realized that organic and heirloom varieties are where it's at, locally sourced products.
So it does make a difference.
Oh, it totally does. I mean, and it's just for the longevity of your life and your body too, you know, like why, you know, put all these chemicals and all these additives in your body when they don't belong there in the first place.
But you have a whole focus on loving what you do too, right?
Right. Yeah, I totally love what I do, and I love food, because food to me is art. I consider myself an artist. Like, I paint, I write music, and one of the things about food, even though we're going into fall and, like, the growing season here in this area of the world is kind of declining, gardening is really important. Like, I spent a month in Maui, like, off the grid, in the rainforest, farming for, like, a month a couple years ago, and that completely... opened my eyes to a lot of things, like why you pay so much for something, like, because there's someone in the soil picking weeds out, you know, from close to a coffee plant, so you don't have to use pesticides. Like, that's the circle of life. Those are the things that need protected and invested, and so support local people and pay a couple extra dollars because you're actually just enriching your life and other people's.
Well, sure, and I think it's all about the experience, you know, and I think you are about this, you know, in your cooking is encouraging people, you know, to enjoy what they're eating or what they're drinking or what they're doing.
Yeah, life is about just taking a seat sometimes and remembering what is important to you. Like, unfortunately, we live in a society where everything is so fast. Things have to look a certain way, be a certain way. You know, you got to keep up with the Joneses or whatever. Well, none of that's important. Like, leave your ego at the door, like we were saying, and take a deep breath. Eat a piece of apple pie. Who cares if you don't fit into your size sixes? Take a deep breath, slam a glass of wine, smoke a cigarette, like, chill out. Like, people just need to relax and, like, tell each other they love each other, you know? Like, bring a pie to your neighbor. Like, why don't people do that stuff anymore?
Well, I don't know. I think they should. I would like a, I mean, pie is one of my favorites. I'd like if somebody brought me a pie, right?
Right. Well, we're pretty much neighbors now.
So you're going to bring me a pie next time.
Yeah. I'll bring you some stretchy pants.
That's right. I would need it for sure.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I have to ask you, though. People are, you know, they see you on TV and they see, you know, what you've done and they think, well, maybe I could do that. And I know we've had some people locally who've wanted to, you know, try out for Food Network Star. Would you advise anybody to, you know, or do you have any advice for people if that's something that they kind of have in the back of their mind?
I think that's something a lot of people think about constantly, that they just, like, don't ask me, you know, because I'm like, I don't know what it's like. Maybe you should try, but I do. Well, the whole thing is, like, I tried out for all this stuff as a joke. I took myself seriously, but not the thought of getting on television.
So you were doing it for fun?
Yeah, I was doing it for fun, and I had a pure heart about it. I didn't go in there like, I'll get the respect of my family and friends now, you know? Because, like, whatever. But I would suggest just being yourself. You know, you could do, like, mock interviews with another person and, you know, because they're going to want to know that you have a culinary point of view. I would suggest maybe if you're really serious, getting some sort of acting coach. And if anything, practice on speaking in public. Hopefully people don't make you nervous. I mean, there's a lot of things that you could definitely do. Maybe get some tattoos, grow a beard.
Because, of course, you know, that can't hurt, right?
Right, yeah. Light some stuff on fire. Be homeless in California.
Because it was, you were in a pretty tough spot when you tried out for Food Network Star. So if you could go over that just a little bit about how unlikely it was that it was going to happen, and yet it did.
Yeah, I forget that sometimes when I'm having a bad day. I got to remember, like, I've leveled up so hard sometimes. So basically, I was in California. I was living in a hostel. I was paying $1,000 a month with the guy I was dating at the time to live in a room that looked like someone had been murdered in Oakland, California, okay? And we had no bathroom of our own and no kitchen, so I was slowly dying inside, for lack of a better term. And so when I tried out for Food Network Star, I just, like, laughed, and I was like, well, I've already lost everything else, you know, because I took a one-way train from Indianapolis to California. But, I mean, I hope this also can inspire people to believe in their dreams and the fact that you can change your life in one day. You just have to believe and have pure intentions. And, you know, a little prayer every now and then really doesn't hurt either. So I was praying and crying, like, a lot in secret out there. So, you know, fight the good fight, and you got to go your own way sometimes.
Now, were you intimidated at all when you were on Food Network Star and you were, you know, meeting one challenge after another? You know, how did you take it all on?
That's a really good question, and sometimes I wonder about that myself. I mean, honestly, like, TV is made to look really easy, but it's like 14-hour days. We were on the road. I was sequestered to not tell anyone where I was or what I was doing, which was kind of cool. I felt like I was in the government. It was nice not having to drive myself anywhere, worry about anything, but I started to lose the quality of my life, you know? Like, I didn't have my best friend to call on the phone. I didn't have my guitar to play. I didn't have paint to unwind on. Everyone had to know where I was at all times. I didn't have those moments where I could just walk outside and go on a walk and get lost, so sometimes I wonder if I actually could have won that season that I was on. But, I mean, what's the point of living in the past? But I wonder sometimes if I would have had, like, the sunshine that I needed, you know, like, but whatever.
In general, you know, how has it been, you know, as an overall experience, you know, having this kind of fame, you know, thrust on you so quickly?
It's been really awesome. I just hope with my success that I can inspire other people and lift other people up, because, like, being a chef is hard. Like, it's been really glorified, and it's, I mean, there's really fun parts of it, but it's equally, like, really hard. It takes a special person to really do it right.
We've been talking with culinary personality L'Oreal Gavin. You can find out more information on L'Oreal, as well as her upcoming appearances and personal chef business at butcherbabe.co. Well, we've been talking about fall and Thanksgiving so far here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio today, but we're also talking at least a little bit about Christmas, specifically the 12 Chefs of Christmas event at the Indianapolis City Market. Now, 12 Chefs has become the signature fundraising event for the market, and no wonder. It's a terrific tasting event in which 12 local chefs create dishes that are paired with 12 seasonal beers from Flat 12 Beer Works in Indianapolis. The City Market's Executive Director, Stevie Stays Kirsch, tells us how the event came about and why it's important to the market.
We just hosted our pairing night where we unveil, A, all the chefs, and then we unveil the beers that will be available this year for them to use, and we do kind of a pairing process. So a lot of fun, a lot of festive camaraderie going on, because a lot of the chefs don't get to casually, socially hang out with each other in a very unstressful setting. And so that's exactly what we try to do with it. And they have a really great time.
So that was at Flat 12, which comes up with all the beers that the chefs use for this event. And they have new beers this year, so it should be fun. So you explain a little bit about how it works.
So Chef Brad Gates, this was his brainchild 4 years ago, and he wanted to do something that really featured the chefs in the market. For a long time, City Market had great merchants, great vendors, but really in the past 5 years, the caliber of food creativity and food offering has raised, and now we can legitimately say chefs in the market. And he wanted to put together, again, a feature of the chefs to highlight their culinary talents and do a fundraiser for City Market, which a lot of people don't know is a 501c3. City Market Corporation is a nonprofit.
So you need fundraisers to keep the market going.
We absolutely do. The market doesn't make money. We're really good at losing money. And the city of Indianapolis thankfully subsidizes the market to offset the utilities since they own the asset of City Market. But our goal is to at least break even, of course, and get off the city dole and the city taxpayers' dole. So that's what we work toward. And it was a great concept. We really kind of gravitated to it and ran with it. Chef Brad Gates organized that very first one. And it was moderately successful. We had a lot of fun, exposed the city market to a lot of people who hadn't been there in many years. And it was lovely. So we decided, let's do this again. This is a successful enough event that we want to resurrect it every year. And we are now in our fourth season with the event, and it's grown in popularity, and tickets actually sell out now.
So it really has become one of those must-do things, you know, for the holiday season in Indianapolis. And, of course, you know, it's the 12 Chefs of Christmas, 12 beers, 12 chefs, 12 really creative samples of food. So tell me a little bit more about how the whole thing works.
So 12 chefs take over the mezzanine level of the historic main market house of City Market. And each chef is paired with a seasonal inspired beer that's brewed by Flat 12 Beer Works. And they do this every year for a limited time. It's a limited run. So you can get it when you get it, and then it's done.
And these are kind of creative beers, right? Not your usual beers.
They're creative beers. It's
like Snickerdoodle Blonde or Glazed Ham Porter, things like that.
Things like that. And they're fun and they're tasty. And our chef's job is to take the beer that they've chosen randomly or has been assigned to them and create a meal surrounding or that will pair well with the tones and notes and everything that beer kind of is about. So this year we wanted to break up the categories into four distinct categories. So you've got fish, you've got dessert, you've got meat, and you've got vegetarian. So something for everybody, and nobody will walk away hungry, I guarantee it.
So they had to pick a category. So say they picked dessert, and then they got the beer assigned to them, or they got the beer assigned to them and then picked dessert or fish or whatever. So then they come up with a dish that uses that beer somehow?
It uses the beer or complements the beer in some way. It gets a little tricky if you picked fish and now you have a heavy porter. Right. You know, it'll be interesting, but they get very creative with it. And then as an attendee, you get to taste all of the offerings that these chefs have come up with along with the beers.
That's right. So you get the food and the beer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, Tomlinson Tap Room is open. If you're just done with the tastings and you want a full pint of something, we will also have a signature cocktail in the tap room as well. So if you're done with beer for the evening, you've had enough beer and you just want something that is gin or bourbon inspired, then we can do that too.
Now, it's, like I said, it's become very popular. So does it typically sell out?
It does sell out. Tickets are on sale now on brownpapertickets.com. We have 3 weeks leading up to the event based on when the tickets go on sale that are a little cheaper, and then tickets go up to full price. So there's a VIP ticket, there's a general admission ticket, and there's a designated driver ticket. So 3 levels, and we'll know if you're a designated driver and you try to get a beer. We're gonna catch you on that. But certainly it's a fun festive event for everybody, whether or not you are in fact participating in the drinking part of it. You can certainly participate in the eating part of it.
Well, that's true. So if beer's not your thing, then there's still an option for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So tickets have sold out for the past 3 years. We hold aside 100 VIP tickets, which gets you access to the event an hour early. So you can start the munching a little earlier than everybody.
Now that's nice. People have kind of gotten accustomed to those early entry VIP kind of tickets.
It's kind of nice because it does get crowded. It's a very popular event, and so we want to make sure that those VIPs get in a little early and enjoy themselves. And then, of course, general admission, and the event is from 7 to 10 p.m. The event is also a competition.
Oh, so do you get to vote on something?
People can vote. It's $1 per vote, and you can vote on your favorite dish. And the nice thing is the winner, the chef who wins that competition, is in the VIP section for the following year. So last year, the winner was Nitin Naidu from Spicebox, so he'll be the VIP chef this year.
And talk a little bit more about the, you know, the need for this kind of event, you know, to kind of keep the market going.
Sure. In addition to just keeping the doors open every day, we do a lot of programming at the market, whether it's things like foreign policy and a local pint in the tap room, to yoga classes, to the great musical programming that we have during farmers market. All of this costs money. So we like to host fundraisers, of course, this being our Keystone fundraiser. In the summertime, we do a 4th of July event called Party on the Plaza. That's kind of our secondary fundraiser. But all of this goes, again, not only to keep the doors open and the heating and the cooling and all of that running, but it also assists us in providing the great programming that we do for the public on a continual basis.
We've been talking with City Market Executive Director Stevie Stays-Kirsch about the upcoming 12 Chefs of Christmas event. Tickets are on sale now and are available at brownpapertickets.com. For information, go to 12chefs.com. We are back here on Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio, talking with Stevie Stays-Kirsch, the Executive Director of the Indianapolis City Market. Stevie has worked to promote innovative programming at the downtown landmark, like the 12 Chefs of Christmas event that we talked about earlier in today's show, but her focus has also been on creating a great mix of vendors at the market. There are new vendors opening soon and a new winter market coming this winter as well, so it was time to sit down with Stevie for an Indianapolis City Market update.
Well, we have a new stand on the mezzanine. For people who are familiar with the market, the mezzanine has long time just been a place where you dine. It's a lunch spot, so you go take your food upstairs and dine. We have now, with Tomlinson Tap Room, we have four permanent or semi-permanent merchants upstairs. The most recent one is Mile Square Coffee Roastery.
A coffee shop? You can get coffee to drink or to buy? Or
both. Yeah, he'll sell coffee beans, and you can get specialty coffee drinks. You can also get his gourmet pour-over coffee. You can't be in a hurry. I will say that. It takes a minute.
It does take a minute.
But it's a wonderful, smooth coffee style that a lot of people gravitate to and really adore. Another merchant in the market who does the slow pour-over coffee is 3 Days in Paris. So that'll give you an example. If you've tried theirs, it's wonderful. So, and they are just in the middle of build-out. I suspect that they will be done by the end of this week and open next week. And it's a great-looking, very... They wanted to design it in a way that kind of took you back to the historic times. So it kind of blends with the history of the City Market, which, by the way, will be 130 years old in 2016.
Oh my goodness.
Main Market House. So look for a lot of programming that we'll be doing around the 130th celebration. A lot of organizations in town are celebrating some kind of anniversary next year. We're just thrilled to say that we're older than the Motor Speedway. We're 130. You youngins are 100. So, but we're partnering with them on some celebrations too. So they wanted to design something that took you back to a time in history, but could also be, if we flash forward 20 or 30 years, could hold its own too. So the design is really timeless, and it's well done. And so they're super excited to be in the market. It's just a great fit.
Now, whereabouts is that one located?
So it's in the southeast portion of the mezzanine, right across from Tomlinson Tap Room. So it's, I don't know, beer and coffee? Absolutely. You know, have a couple beers, sober up, grab a cup of coffee, go home.
So tell me what other kind of new things you have, some other new stalls or things happening at the market.
Well, we lost a great asset to the market, a great merchant in the Food Florist who moved to New York. We lost her to New York, but seamlessly, a couple gals who were working at the tamale place saw an opportunity there and opened up a place called Say Cheese. It is a gourmet grilled cheese and sandwich restaurant that has probably 14 different grilled cheese selections on the menu.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
It's amazing. Everything from vegetarian to heavy meat. They also operate a small deli out of the space, so you can get cheeses and meats to take home and create sandwiches yourself as well.
Well, that's nice. Okay, so we have another lunch option in there as well. 3 Days in Paris.
3 Days in Paris, new ownership. They have kind of undergone a tweaking of the menu, and they will be relaunching that new menu next week. In addition, on the day of their relaunch, they are offering free crepes from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. So I suspect we'll see some lines and some crowds in the market on that day, but check the website to make sure that you know which day it is. But I think it's Friday.
Other things happening in the market? I know that, you know, the Winter Farmers Market will be kicking off very shortly.
Yeah, in fact, next week, November 14th, the Winter Market will be in its current space in the platform or the West Wing of City Market through December. The plan then is to move over into the Circle City Industrial Complex east of Mass Avenue, and they'll be opening up and operating there for the rest of the season. Kara Daffhorn from U Relish also saw an opportunity to kind of seamlessly create an event that took its place. Saturdays during the winter market have become one of the best days at City Market.
Now that's very nice. You know, that people, so the market brings people down there, and then they also, so then they also come into the market, the main building of the market as well.
It's been wonderful for the merchants in the market. So we wanted to create, and Kara took charge of this, create an event that captured that audience and didn't replicate, but certainly complemented the winter market. So she's got about 17 to 20 merchants, vendors lined up from around the state who sell everything from honey and other farm products to, I know Circle City Soups will be there selling pints and quarts of his soups. So kind of a nice mix of retail and prepared food and whole foods.
And that kicks off after the winter market isn't there, is that right?
Correct. It kicks off technically the first Saturday in January, which will be nice.
other things happening that, you know, that people can look forward to, or things that, you know, you wish people knew about the market, things like that?
We just signed a deal with Lava Lips. Lava Lips was a great hot sauce retail shop at 49th and College area. And they are moving into the market, at least in a pop-up shop through the holiday scenario. If they do well, who knows? We may be signing them on as a permanent merchant, but we're excited to have them. It's a nice retail component to what is largely viewed as a lunchtime spot, prepared foods for the city. Given that we have so much development to the east side of the market with Cummins, with Flaherty and Collins and 360 Tower, with 21C Hotel, with the artistry, with all of that, we are really working with the merchants to integrate more retail component into what they're already doing. So we don't want to say, we're putting a hard moratorium on prepared foods because a lot of them do such a great job. So guess what? Hey, Maurizio's Pizzeria, you're already here making pizza. Do a Papa Murphy style take and bake for all the residents and workers, employees that you're going to see right next door. I read a study recently that demonstrated that more than 65% of Americans make their decision about what they're going to have for dinner at 4 p.m.
I agree with that. Absolutely.
We are shopping so meal specific, and so we're working at City Market to kind of create those customized market baskets so that you can come in and get a baguette from Circle City Sweets and maybe a pint or a quarter of soup and or a Papa Murphy style pizza and take it home and cook it in your own kitchen.
I think you're going to be seeing more and more people shopping the City Market because there'll be more and more people downtown.
I think it's going to be amazing. I think, again, it tweaks our business model. Again, you know, the market started out as a place, a destination where people shopped for all of their goods, their staples. It was the longest time it was for shopping destination only. And then after World War II, people kind of settled the suburbs. And that brought on the advent of the supermarket and how convenient those were. And so downtown, the City Market really morphed more into a lunch counter for the downtown employee base rather than the residential base because the residential base was moving. Guess what? Again, shift in how we live, and people are moving back to urban cores, and that once again prompts a shift on our part that we have to meet the demands of our audience. We have to know what they want, and they're going to want retail items, whole foods, those kind of things that they can grab and go.
We've been talking with City Market Executive Director Stevie Stays-Kirsch. For more information on the market, its vendors and events, go to indycm.com. Well, it's just the first week of November, but we've definitely had a holiday focus to the show here this week, and that's okay. Even though I do still have Halloween decorations on my front porch, I'm okay with looking ahead, at least a little bit. I'll look ahead to Thanksgiving, but that's as far as I want to go right now. Even though stores quickly switched over from black and orange Halloween decor to the red and green extravaganza of Christmas, and even though there are advent calendars at the supermarket and Christmas trees at the discount stores, I'm going to enjoy November and only look ahead to Thanksgiving. Because there's certainly enough Thanksgiving stuff to keep a person busy, you know, with all of those countdown to Thanksgiving preparation stories in the magazines, you know, the ones that have you doing the chopping and the cooking and the baking ahead of time so that on the big day all you do is light some candles on the table that you set a week ago and pull out all your pre-prepped casserole dishes, pop them in the oven, and relax. Well, that's never how my Thanksgivings go. We tend to spend the whole day cooking and baking so that by the time we finally sit down to dinner, we truly are thankful that we just got everything on the table and got everyone rounded up to sit down and enjoy it. And even though I don't do much of that ahead of time planning, I really do enjoy the build up to Thanksgiving, which is why I don't want to skip over it all in favor of Christmas. I'll happily turn on the Christmas music the day after Thanksgiving, but for now I want to think about turkey and stuffing and cranberries and persimmon pudding and pumpkin pie. So even if I don't actually do much to get ready for Thanksgiving, I still want to think about it all. And oddly enough, one of the things, Thanksgiving things I've been thinking about is, wait for it, turducken. You know what I'm talking about? That odd creation of a chicken inside a duck inside a turkey where the meat is separated by layers of stuffing. It's an oddly interesting creation that, honestly, I thought was probably more trouble than it was worth. And I didn't even have to make it myself. I wrote about turduckens for a newspaper article once, but all I had to do was cook the thing. The butcher did all the work of preparing and stuffing the actual birds. And as we heard earlier in the show, butcher babe L'Oreal Gavin has a small version of turducken on her Thanksgiving catering menu. And it was Kincaid's Butcher Shop that made the turducken I tried, and they still make them, so you can find them at lekincaidmeats.com. But even though I don't plan on doing the real turducken thing this year, a vegetable version caught my eye when I saw it online the other day. It was called a veg-ducken, and you can find it at epicurious.com, one of my favorite food sites, by the way. It's a butternut squash, and inside that is an eggplant, and inside the eggplant is a zucchini, and at the very center is a green onion. You can imagine how the layers work, and it actually looks like it would taste good. Plus, it solves the problem of a vegetarian centerpiece dish without resorting to a ho-hum stuffed portobello mushroom cap or, heaven help us, a tofurkey roast, which I have indeed cooked, although not with especially memorable results. So I think a stuffed vegetable version of a turducken has some promise for several reasons. I'm sure it's tasty, for one thing. The folks at Epicurious.com rarely let me down in that category. And even though I didn't think the real turducken was all that exciting, the layers of meat weren't especially distinctive, so flavor-wise it was a bit of a letdown, I do still like the idea of going all out on a dish. And whether you try a traditional turducken or give this vegetarian version a try, there's something kind of appropriate about it all. With all those layers, with one thing hidden inside something else, and wrapped up in different kinds of stuffing and not knowing what you might be getting into? Well, that's almost a metaphor for a family Thanksgiving right there. You've been listening to Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio and WFYI HD to the Point. I'm your host, Jolene Katzenberger. Thank you so much for tuning into the show this week, and thanks also to our guests, Joella Meyer-Sharp of HoosierGardener.com, Food Network stars L'Oreal Gavin, who you can find at butcherbabe.co, and to Stevie Stays Kirsch, Executive Director of the Indianapolis City Market. And thanks also to producer John Katzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, Indiana Radio.